If you're going to keep four quarterbacks, what position group has to go? Or at least what position group has to make do with a little bit less, I should say. Nathan Zagura is here to answer that question. Then I'm letting him go right up. No, I'm not kidding. Nathan, congratulations on the child. I think this is the first time we've talked about it on the air. Congratulations on your new child.
Thank you, brother. Little Luca, 18 days old, man. 18 days old. We are in the mix. Fully in it.
I love the family. I love the family middle name as well. It's beautiful.
Yeah, of course it's got to be Luca Dragomir. You know it. Yes. You know it, Monfer.
I love that name. I remember Andy was like, why do you call him that? I go, it's his middle name. I go, people don't know that. I don't care. It's my nickname for him, and it's his middle name. It's his government name. I don't give a damn what you think. Anyway, Nathan, four quarterbacks, yeah. One. Do you think? I think there's a very high possibility they could be keeping four quarterbacks. Do you think they keep four quarterbacks?
Is it possible? Yes. Would I be surprised? Also, yes. It's just a lot of people to carry at that position. Not to say that it isn't the most important position in the NFL. It most certainly is. But I just think that is it, with what you need on game day. Now, the fact that you can elevate a couple people throughout the week gives you a little bit more flexibility if you didn't think that, you know, for example, your third tight end would be somebody who would be poached off your practice squad. If you didn't think maybe your sixth wide receiver was somebody who wouldn't be poached off your practice squad. If you thought maybe your ninth offensive lineman was somebody you could get away with being there, you have the ability to elevate those people a few times a year. So that is a way that they could go about doing it and still getting what they want out of their, you know, the game day active roster. But it would put a lot of stress on it, because I think when you look at this team and you look at it historically speaking, you're going to have 23 or 24 on offense. It is not going to be 25-25 split. There you're going to skew towards the defensive side. And I think at Browns, let's say it's 24 and 26. If you were to have four quarterbacks, if you were then to have, my guess is, you know, you are going to have three or four running backs. I think you're going to have three locks for sure, Judkins, Ford, and Sampson. But, you know, they brought in a fullback again, Ken. And Troy Hairston, I think, is what they're getting back to, has a good chance to make this team. So let's say that there's four running backs. So four quarterbacks, four running backs. My guess is you'd keep three tight ends, but maybe you'd think that you could get away with, you know, Blake Whitehart or Brendan Bates or Trey McKitty. And hopefully Brendan Bates is okay after he tried to Happy Gilmore a golf ball at the tight end university. Maybe you could get away with two on the 53, you know, initially. But I think it's got to come from it has to come from either wide receiver, tight end, or the offensive line. And wide receiver, I think, is a position you really could end up having only five guys on. I really think that you could go into it with five this year. And if you did that, if you had four quarterbacks, four running backs, five receivers, three tight ends, then you'd have eight offensive linemen on the roster. Typically, I think you're going to have nine. But those are the kind of calculations you're going to have to make. That's where you're going to have to make those decisions. But it's got to come from, I think, wide receiver for sure. You'd only have five in that scenario. We're going to play more 12 personnel anyway, and I think we're going to play more with two running backs on the field as well. So we were not going to be exclusively 11 personnel or predominantly 11 personnel like we were a year ago.
Nathan Zagura joins us here on the show. It's like, because I, you know, some people were saying, I was asked this question yesterday, by a person we would both know who knows football. And I said, yeah. Boy, that's a hell of a question there, because it's like, well, I think they could keep four quarterbacks. It's like, all right, do you go to the wide receiver room? Because it's like, well, if all these guys don't make the wide receiver room, because you're thinking about the top end of the wide receiver room, and then it's like, well, after the cuts, you're still probably going to want to keep the same number, and you might want to keep those weapons for any one of these four quarterbacks that you could have. Because, I mean, tight ends, they come at a premium. Wide receivers, they come at a premium. You just mentioned fullback now, so it's like, man, there's a lot of moving around you have to do if you want to keep those four guys. This should be very, very interesting, Nathan.
Because the reality is, looking at the roster as it is right now, it's hard for me to see a situation in which we wouldn't keep nine offensive linemen. You've got DeJuan Jones, Joel Bitonio, Ethan Posick, Wyatt Teller, Jack Conklin. Then you've got Cornelius Lucas, who you signed, who's your swing tackle. Tevin Jenkins, they like a lot. Zach Zinner was a third-round pick a year ago, and then Luke Whipler's back. So it's hard to kind of see from a math standpoint how you wouldn't end up with nine. Now, they're cross-training Zinter, you know, at center, and maybe that would allow them to, you know, try to get Whipler to the practice squad. But it feels like that's a room that could be nine. I think you could get away with two tight ends, like if you only kept Njoku and Fannin, and then you had one of the other guys back on the practice squad. Mm-hmm. But you talk to receiver room, Judy Tillman, I think there are like three and this is, I could be wrong about this, but right now I think there are three locks in that room. And I think those three locks would be Judy Tillman and Jamari Thrash. And then I think DeAndre Carter obviously was brought here to finally, and hopefully we can get a returner through the preseason, because we keep bringing in these guys who are great returners and they never, unfortunately, have been able to get this season. But DeAndre Carter, I think, has a very good opportunity to make it. And then if Deontay Johnson is Deontay Johnson, I think that he would make it. But that's five right there, which means David Bell is fighting for a roster spot. It means Mike Woods is fighting for a roster spot. And some of these young guys that they have in that rounding out that room right now would all be fighting for roster spots. But it's really hard at four quarterbacks. It's going to be hard to get the kind of roster that you want. I mean, this is a team that's been carrying two quarterbacks, you know, predominantly. And now to go up to four would be it's a big leap, and it would make it very difficult because, like I said at the beginning, you're going to want 26 on defense. Jim Schwartz is going to want 10 on the defensive line. You're going to want probably at least 10 in the defensive backfield, and then probably six linebackers, because those guys are your special teams guys. And that's a room that even without JOK has a lot of people that I think they want to keep in the program.
The national media has been twisting themselves into pretzels trying to come up with which quarterback is going to be traded. And it kind of seems like it comes down to Joe Flacco or Kenny Pickett. From your perspective, Nathan, which one brings the most in return?
Probably at this point, Kenny Pickett, just because he is a former first rounder and he is young and he started 50, you know, he's 15 and 10 as a starter. So that would be one. It would be interesting if, for example, you know, maybe down in New Orleans where Kellen Moore was just with him in Philly, if he said, you know, I'd like to, it's not working out with Tyler Shuck. Maybe we need to bring him down here to be kind of the starter and see what he has. He would, but I also think you got to take a step back and think about this from the Browns standpoint is, number one, kind of obviously you're trying to win games this year. I think that goes without saying. Kenny Pickett has been a winning quarterback in this division and in the National Football League. He's a guy that, as we were, Ken and I talked about a few weeks ago, not supposed to like because he was the Steelers guy. We pointed out all of his flaws. And certainly there's a reason that he's now on to his third team. But, you know, we've seen guys bounce around and have kind of a career resurgence. What people have to remember on the Kenny Pickett side of things is there are two possibilities. If Kenny Pickett comes to the Cleveland Browns and plays well, let's just say that scenario, if he plays well, there are two possible outcomes. One is that he plays well enough that you try to see if you can find a way to afford him, which might honestly be unlikely. The other part is if he plays really well and then goes and signs somewhere, let's call it in the, you know, $20 to $30 million a year range, which is, you know, kind of that, you know, bridge quarterback, but maybe he's more than that, which we saw, you know, a Daniel Jones type get, or, you know, even if he has a really good year and then maybe he's getting, you know, not quite Sam Darnold money, but in that 20, 30 million, that's potentially worth a third round pick for the Cleveland Browns in the compensatory formula. So there's just more, I think, current incentive and future incentive to see what you have with Kenny Pickett rather than with Joe Flacco. So if somebody was to be moved, it would, in my mind, it would probably be Flacco.
I just can't imagine you'd be getting much for either of them. So I'm like, well, we need a quarterback so damn badly. So let's just see what they have with our football team.
Well, I agree with that. And I think that goes back to the point of why would you rather see Pickett than necessarily Flacco? And I think, you know, Joe Flacco, as we talked about, had that magical run with us, you know, a couple of years ago, going 4-1 as a starter, 300 yards in every game. But if you kind of look at his body of work since he's left Baltimore, even going back to 2017, it's been, in terms of a win-loss ratio, it hasn't been favorable. And so if there isn't going to be a compensatory pick ever attached to Joe Flacco or a potential, you know, long-term future attached to Joe Flacco. So that's why I think Kenny Pickett will get every opportunity to be the guy in that role early in the season. That's not to say that he will do it. He's going to have to earn it. And if not, I think that's why Joe Flacco is here. I think ultimately Joe Flacco is here because the Browns thought they were going to go into the season with Kenny Pickett, Joe Flacco, and Dylan Gabriel. And then the way the draft unfolded, all of a sudden now here's Shedeur Sanders, who's had a very nice camp and is really, he's a very darn good thrower of the football, that changes how we're looking at this quarterback room.
Obo Okoronkwo let go yesterday. They got to like somebody for that move to be made to fill his shoes. Who is it?
Yeah. I think they really like Isaiah McGuire and what they saw out of him last year. I think they really like Alex Wright as well. So you've got Miles as the number one. And then I can tell you they have a very good start to the offseason. Again, no pads are on. We don't know anything about, you know, that. But Joe Tryon-Soyinka has been very impressive. former first round pick of the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. He's been very impressive. And so he's a guy that they really think can be a big time edge rusher. That's why he was drafted with that kind of pedigree. They also like Julian Okwara, who they signed. And then we can't forget that last year, Cam Thomas played really well for the Cleveland Browns when he got opportunities on there. So I think it's a combination of Tryon Soyinka came in. He looked good. They're waiting to get after June 1st for Obo. This gives them an opportunity to sign with another team as well. And, you know, you can always go back to what do a lot of times these things are, is that it feels like the Browns think that in the guys they signed and the rookies, that they have a very, they like that defensive end room. I can tell you that very much. And Obo was a great dude when he was here. I really enjoyed interviewing him whenever we got the opportunity to do that. And I thought that he played well, especially his first year here. He had 12 tackles for loss, which was a career high. But you look at the salary ramifications when he signed that three-year, $19 million deal. Their Browns are going to save because of when they did this over the next two seasons. And the way that they kind of have done their contracts is they throw on these void years that allows kind of the salaries to be spaced out. But because they're doing that and because they did do that with him, it's going to save them over the next couple of years about $8 million. So I think that's why the move was made, more so than necessarily his performance, but and that they felt like they had guys coming in that would be able to replace that performance.
They added kicker Andre Schmidt yesterday. Competition for Dustin Hopkins or just an extra camp leg?
I think that's one that we'll wait and see, right? It certainly raises an eyebrow when you see a move like that be made because, you know, Dustin Hopkins, to your point, signed that deal for the Browns. There would be $5 million in dead money if he were to be not on this football team over the next couple of years. So I don't think that that is necessarily in the cards. I think that they want Dustin Hopkins to be that guy. And I think we all do want to see him regain that form that he had a couple of years ago when he was, you know, brilliant. This was a career anomaly year for him, making 67% of his kicks. He's an 84% kicker for his career, been around 90 for the 3 years prior. So hopefully that's where he gets back to, but it definitely raises an eyebrow. He was here. He was released. They bring him in. My guess is it's more camp leg, but it's certainly something that, you know, is going to bear watching. If it's any kind of close in this competition, obviously it's going to be Dustin Hopkins because you're paying him the money and you'd like to get something for that.
So they're still going around. I want to go around the NFL a little bit with you here, Nathan, because you're very, very good with the league as well. You got Trey Hendrickson, who's still at an impasse. Shamar Stewart, who's obviously still at an impasse. Yeah. That's not as surprising as what some people would think. Does Joe Burrow have the right to be miffed about something like that when they've taken care of his wide receivers?
Yeah, because he's trying to, you know, win a Super Bowl, and Trey Hendrickson is a big part of that. And then they make the investment in Shamar Stewart with a first round pick. And it sounds like that's kind of a beef over how his bonus is going to be paid out, when it's going to be paid out. And these are things that, as an organization, if you want to compete in the National Football League, that I think you need to get squared away. So I do think he has an opportunity to be miffed. And now they could say, look, we can't pay everybody, but you know, you want to make sure your first round pick that you make that investment is on playing for your team that season. And Trey Hendrickson is a guy who certainly, you know, coming off season where he led the league in sacks is somebody that you want out there as well. It's a very interesting study because, and it shows the difference in the styles of their football teams where a owner's wealth is because they own the football team. And then there are football teams where the owners had wealth and bought the football team. And those teams operate very differently in terms of cash because those who came in with a lot of money are certainly more liquid and able to, you know, use cash spending to their advantage. The Browns certainly do that very, very well. They just haven't gotten the quarterback yet. But I think if, you know, you ever find a Joe Burrow type talent on a Jimmy Haslam and D Haslam owned football team, they're going to make sure that they have everything around them. And I think that's one of the differences in the NFL, which is why you saw some of that private equity money be able to come in. And I think the Bengals would be, from that standpoint, a very wise team to take some of that and have, you know, $500 million in cash that they would be able to use for things like this to make sure that, you know, these little, what I would call preventable headaches, go away.
I want to know, taunting, yes or no?
Absolutely.
My guy. I got to tell you. Nathan, I had so many people disagreeing with me on this yesterday. Go ahead.
Hey, listen, I think taunting, celebrations, fun, all of it. What, you know, I think, and I don't want to say casual fans, but as somebody, I'll spin it the other way, as somebody who gets to be in the building every day and gets to see what these guys do in terms of the work that they put in terms of the risks that they take with their body, in terms of the physical toll that this game takes on them and everything that goes into from time in the film room, from time in the gym, from time in the treatments, to all the things they have to do to get their bodies able to play on a Sunday, that they should be able to celebrate their successes how they see fit. Now, obviously, it can't be disrespectful and it can't be like violence-inducing and things like that, but if guys want to go out there and have fun, you remember Sean Merriman had lights out. You had people who had celebrations, the icky shuffle down there in Cincinnati. All of that stuff should be a part of the game. I think that these guys have earned the right to celebrate when they do something because so much goes into it, and yes, they're compensated very well. And my dad would right now, I could hear him screaming at me, act like you've been there, blah, blah, blah. I just think that this is, it should be fun. It is a game. It is a sport. And these guys risk so much and put so much on the line. Take our guy who we love, Jeremiah Owusu-Koramoah. We don't know if he's ever going to play football again. In one instant, that changed for him. So while he's out there, he should be able to play with the joy and celebrate his accomplishments.
I love it. Nathan, we thank you so much for the time. All the best.
Thank you. And Daryl, I just want to say you did a great job covering everything with Brook Park and the state and the city and the county and all of that. And it's been
Daryl,
it's been awesome. And I'm glad that we're looking like we're going to be in Brook Park in 2029. Very exciting time, I think, for everybody in this region.
We'll see you in Brook Park, Nathan.
Daryl Wright.
That's right.
Outstanding. Yeah. Outstanding. Right. Nathan, thank you. Yes, sir. Nathan Zagura on the North Homestead Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline.